Is it immoral and unethical to use neurolinguistic programming in dating because it's manipulative? Can NLP actually help you seduce people who are outside of your league? Is there a place for NLP in your long-term relationship? These are the questions we'll be answering today on the Self-Concept Podcast, so get ready for a spicy episode. I'm also joined by my co-host, Yulia and Nate.
This is an exciting topic, and I'm looking forward to jump right into it.
I'm looking forward to it, too.
Cool. And as usual, we always put some sort of free something or another of value related to the topic in the description below this video. If you're listening on our, if you downloaded the podcast, you'll also find that there's an area there where we also put a link to something for free that will help you and either an exercise or something that will further your understanding if this is a topic that you're interested in.
So if you don't mind, Damon, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions? First off, you mentioned seduction. Do you mind if we define that? It's a pretty charged term these days, and so we can all be speaking from the same place.
Yeah, so I actually looked up the definition, and I looked up a few definitions, official definitions of seduction, and most of them were actually quite positive. And then you do have some that involve like manipulation or deception in the sense that you're getting people to do things or act against their interest. And so I think, yeah, if that's how you perceive seduction, that it's something that is against you're making someone do something that against their interest. It's not really making them, but it's deceiving them into doing something against their interest. Then I would agree with you. That's a bad thing. And we don't want to do that. I don't really see seduction that way. I see seduction very similar to the way that I see sales. If you close a sale and you deliver on that promise, then that just means you really communicated your offer very well. You very well understood what was important to the person you sold the product or service to. I see seduction the same way. I see seduction as you have a common interest and you're connecting on that common interest, and then you take an action, toward and in that direction. And as long as you, the seducer, are fulfilling on what you're promising, then there's no deception. There's no manipulation in a bad way. Manipulation is another one of those tricky words where it's like, well, if you really look at it, it's actually pretty neutral and it doesn't mean anything good or bad. It depends on how you use it. And so, again, that's how I see seduction. It really depends on how you use it.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Do you mind if we take that idea and we bring it to a real life case study and we talk a little bit around how the two of you met?
Is that sure? Is that okay?
Do you mind? I'd love to hear is a little bit about how you went about connecting with Yulia, and I'd love to also hear from Yulia what her experience was and that kind of thing.
All right, you just want me to go off.
Yeah, if you don't mind, just so where did the two of you meet? How did you meet?
So I should also say that I have a background prior to meeting her. I had a background in NLP, and I'd say even prior to that, I do have a background in practicing seduction. So that was part of me. I feel like by the time I got around to meeting Yulia, I had been dating a lot for a few years, especially after my divorce. And I was feeling quite lost at the age of 37, being single for the first time in 15 years. So mm-hmm. I went back to looking at seduction and what was there. And now I had a lot of NLP training, so I wanted to merge the two. So I went on a journey for a while, trying to find a good fit for me, because I was looking for a partner I wanted to share my life with. A lot of times people think that all people into seduction, it just means that they're having one night stands for, back to back. And that's just not true. There's a lot of people who go to seduction because they are looking for that special someone to spend the rest of their lives with, rather than just settle for, somebody they met out of some, convenience at work or something like that. And they just settle down with that person because they're nice enough. But those relationships aren't usually very rewarding or fulfilling or exciting. So I wanted something rewarding, fulfilling, exciting, a real life partner. And I wasn't having much luck. I was dating a lot, but I wasn't having much luck. And I actually stopped dating for about 6 months, where I was just like, I'm done. I'm tired. I know I'm going to get lonely, but I'm just going to deal with that. And then I was also working on the self-concept model online training, the Transforming Yourself one that, Steve Andreas created, and we knew he didn't have long to live. And so I went to him and I said, hey, I want your blessing on this. And he goes, you can create this training without my permission. I said, I understand that, but I want your blessing. And he was like, go for it. So I took that time that I had free time, extra time, because I wasn't dating. It's amazing how much time dating can take up in your life. And I was using that time to create that online training. Mm-hmm. And I was really immersed in it and loving it, because I love revisiting the model, and it's so dynamic and it has so much depth to it. And I got to the last part about boundaries. And that was the part that I kind of overlooked, because I was more interested in the straight on self-concept work. Mm-hmm. And the boundaries work is more of an extension of your self-concept. And it's fun to play around with. And I have played around with it a lot, but I remember working on that part of the training and realizing, why have I never used this in dating? Because it seems like you could relieve and approach anxiety. For people who don't know, that's the anxiety that people feel. I say people because I was surprised at how many women actually wanted to learn this as well, because they want more choice and they don't want to wait for necessarily a man to pick them out of a crowd. They want to go up to the person that they're interested in and start a conversation and possibly a connection. Mm-hmm. So I say people because we all have that anxiety of, we see someone we're attracted to, especially someone we don't know, and we want to talk to them, but there's all this fear and anxiety about doing it. That was something that is all the NLP techniques I had used, I was never quite able to sort of get rid of, but I would push through it. I would kind of have to like will myself through it. But when I was working on the boundary section of the online training, I was like, I think I could use this and overcome that anxiety. And so I kind of put it aside and didn't think too much about it at that particular day. I also knew that I needed to get out. I hadn't been out much. I hadn't been socializing much, hadn't been getting much sunlight. So I go out downtown, it was broad daylight, and I see this woman walking down the street. And immediately I was like, oh, I want to meet her. And then I started making all these excuses like, oh, she's too beautiful. She's too young. She's this, she's that. She's never going to like me or anything. And, this is after years of dating, years of doing approaching. I'm still things are coming up for me. And I was like, wait a minute, the boundaries work. I was just working on this. I need to give this a try. And so we have this boundary that everyone carries with them, and it protects them. You don't realize it because it's very unconscious. But what we do in the self-concept model is we bring that into consciousness by coding it, by understanding, well, where is your boundary? And we base that on how close can somebody get to you before you go, get back from me. And, I need my personal space. So I was well aware of my boundary. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to expand the boundary. And because everybody or everything and everybody inside your boundary gives you the sense of being comfortable with them, familiar with them, and rapport with them. So that's what I did. I expanded my boundary as she was walking down the street, looking into windows of stores. I thought she was window shopping. It turned out that she was actually scoping these places out because she wanted to rob them. She's Romanian.
Come on.
No, I like to tell people that she was actually looking for a job, which was her second job, which was actually very Romanian. Romanians work really hard, and they have a very good, solid work ethic.
And I did not rob anything.
She didn't rob anything. But she was looking for a second job. I thought she was shopping, and that was kind of slowing her down, because if she had been walking at a fast pace, the pace you normally walk, because she walks very fast, I have to tell her, hey, are we in a rush? Like, take it easy. But anyway, so she's walking, she's stopping and looking in windows. And this whole time I'm trying to sort this thing out before she gets past me and too far away where I miss this opportunity. And so finally, like, I expand the boundary and it's like, okay, that feels better, but I'm still a little concerned. I'm not quite feeling it. And then there's this part where you can try dropping the boundary, which makes you feel very exposed, very naked, very unprotected. And I just had to assure myself, okay, I'm in a public place. It's broad daylight. There's nothing I really need to protect myself from here. So I dropped my boundary. And as soon as I did that, it was like, I felt kind of a Zen oneness with everything. And it now felt like everything had gone from feeling a little hostile, because when you're trying to bump up against that boundary and you're trying to do something outside of your comfort zone, there's often that feeling of danger and all that. But now it felt friendly. It felt like even the trees wanted me to go and approach her. And so I looked at her without a boundary, and it felt, she seemed like even more inviting. And she's also had a very bright look on her face, very just open, you know, taking in the world around her, which was also very inviting. So finally, I just walked up to her and told her I thought she was very cute and I wanted to meet her. She responded very well to that. And the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, when you're in the broad daylight in on the main street in this little town and someone just approaches you, you know, kindly and with a smile on their face and just says, I think you're cute, how else would you react to that? So I feel like that particular approach was so natural in a way, even though we don't really see it these days, but it seemed so natural and so pleasant and friendly. And yeah, I can definitely say that I felt safe. I felt like I would like to meet more. I would like to know more about you, and I would like to go on a date. So yeah, I think using NLP to give yourself the courage to approach someone, that's definitely not manipulation. It's definitely not doing anything mean. Now, what you do on the first date.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But what's really funny is when people say, well, how did you meet? And regardless if they're asking her or me, and I would just say, well, I just walked up to her, you know, on the street, and they know I'm like the NLP guy. So they go like, you know, they get this little grin on their face and they go, what did you tell her? You know, like there was something really, you know, deceptive or seductive or, you know, that I said to her that just put her into a hypnotic trance, you know, that made her, and it was like, I just said, hi, I think you're cute. and they were like, that's it? And it's like, yeah, I mean, really, that's what made it feel so natural. And there's two main things there. Yes, it needs to be very simple, and it needs to be something that's honest, which was the truth. I saw her and immediately that was the first thought that I had. Wow, she's so cute. The other thing is, what was the other thing? Oh, yes. Showing my intent right away. So that is really, really important, because if you don't express your intent right away, like there was no doubt, she knew why I was approaching her. It wasn't like, and she actually told me one time, you were telling me you were jogging and then you had stopped and you were walking, and because you had your knee brace on or something like that, somebody asked you if you were a jogger or a runner. And then he just starts asking a bunch of random questions. And what were you thinking when he was doing that?
It was very confusing. It was like, what's the point? Where is this going? And yeah, it was confusing, because now looking back on it, most probably he was trying in a way to approach me, to maybe get my number. But the entire conversation, it was so weird and so jumping from one thing to another that it was just off. So definitely, yeah, it was very clear. You gave me a compliment and then you wanted my phone number. Obviously, you didn't want to be my buddy. You really wanted to date me.
Yeah, so that's another thing I see not just men doing, I see women doing when they're interested in a guy. They just start like this casual conversation that doesn't show their intent. And so the person is left going, well, do they like me? Is that why they're talking to me? Do they, you know, or are they just interested in having a casual conversation? So confusion does what? And any, you know, we can relate it to sales. If you confuse your prospect who you're trying to sell something to, are they going to buy? No, confused people don't buy. And so if you go up to someone and you're not making your intent clear, and the only reason why you would do that is because you're trying to protect your own ego, you're worried about being rejected or what have you. If you go into it and don't make your intent clear, they're going to be confused. And so you can't expect them to then say, hey, you want to go out sometime? Because they don't know why you're approaching them. So that was really important. I wanted to start with something positive, something honest, and then also something that showed my intent right from the start. And so that's going to work out much better for you. Now, when we went on the first date, which is what she mentioned, she was curious about what I did. It also helped that I told her I was a YouTuber. She was immediately like, whoa, YouTuber. I didn't tell her that I only had like 15,000 subscribers. That might have changed things, huh?
Well, I don't think so. I was just curious about the idea of being a YouTuber, what it involved.
So I continued on with the boundaries work, because I thought, okay, this I had already thought this could be useful in the actual date.
But the thing is, I made it easy for him. I exactly laid it out. I asked, what do you do? And he said NLP. And I was like, show me. So I was well aware that he's going to do something with me. I don't think I knew what I should expect because it worked. But I made it very easy for you, as in you didn't have to necessarily hide or, you know, make it as if I'm not aware what's going on. I was well aware.
Yeah. And whenever possible, like I do work in persuasion covertly a lot of times, meaning I don't tell the person what I'm doing. And there's a good reason for that. And that's, I'd like to have, we should explore that a little bit in this conversation. Yeah. But there's also times where I like to tell the person what I'm doing. I think that can be very useful too. The thing is I'm not out to deceive anyone. I'm out to get a response that I want. And sometimes that response is better by being very overt, and sometimes it's better by being more covert. So when we were on the first date, she asked, you know, what do you do? And I say, well, NLP is not something that's very easy to explain. It's not very theoretical. It's very experiential. Would you like to experience it? And she said, yes. So, you know, I got her permission. And then I elicited her boundary. So very much like I was talking about my boundary and how I changed it so that I could lower the anxiety of approaching her. Mm-hmm. I elicited her boundary. So everything inside her boundary is what is comfortable to her, and everything outside of it is, you know, not that it's hostile, but it potentially hostile. So I need to keep that out. So once I elicited her boundary, I said, just out of curiosity, where am I in relation to your boundary? So I was, you know, wanted to know if I'm already in there, which I was pretty sure I wasn't. And she said, you're on the outside. Do you remember this?
Yes, yeah, I do.
She said, you're on the outside, but you're very close to it. And so I took that as meaning you're doing it. You're doing well.
Yeah.
Keep
yeah.
doing what you're doing, and it's going well. And so I said, okay, well, just for fun here, let's see what happens when you put me inside of your boundary. And as soon as she did that, I saw her kind of like light up, and I felt like I could feel the connection. The rapport just like went really, really high. And then she shut it down real fast. I could see you kind of like pulled back, and she was like, oh, okay, that's a little too invasive. And I said, okay, well, you know, put me on the outside of your boundary. I don't want you to feel uncomfortable or anything like that. But by that time, the damage had already been done.
And it's gone so well that we are married and we've been together for 5 years.
Yeah.
No, the thing is that it was indeed a very nice exercise. I feel like working or doing that particular exercise definitely put our relationship on a faster speed. I feel like I got much faster comfortable with him. And I would assume maybe you also put me in your boundary after that.
You already were. So ever since when we first met. So
yeah. So I think that just helped the relationship kind of build a little faster. And it just got stronger after that. So I don't think it was something that had long-term effect or necessarily made me be manipulated in wanting to see you again just because you're in my boundary.
But don't you feel like I totally manipulated you and deceived you and all that?
No, and the reason for that is because you have made lots of promises along the way. You started, even though you just started dating, after a few months, a few weeks, you started to create these visions together of us doing certain things.
That was the other part of it.
And the thing is, I thought that it's nice. I didn't engage much because I was, you know, kind of careful. Why would I make dreams what I'm going to do next year with this guy? I just met him. But the thing is, the ones that were rather short term, you fulfilled on all of them. So that gave me the impression that everything you say, you're going to accomplish, or at least everything that's within your control and nothing else comes up. But you didn't make any promises that you didn't keep.
So you didn't have buyer's remorse.
I did not have buyer's remorse, and I still don't.
That's good to hear. That would have been something I've said, well, I do now. So we can talk about how what I did next and like after we started dating, but I wanted to check in. Nate, did you have other questions about what I mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, so even the word seduction for me kind of, it does bring up this a negative connotation in my mind. Like it just like there's a kind of a feeling that's like it. And so, but what you've described so far is just sounds like understanding the unconscious mind, understanding yourself really well, and being able to really just help everybody come together to like express the potential of the relationship, you know? And I find that really, really interesting. So you mentioned, the two of you met at some point. Yulia, you were in California at the time. Is that right?
Yes.
And then Damon, you mentioned, in the next exercise around, visions and things like that. And was that while she was there? When was that? And as far as the scope of time, so we're at 5 years now, everybody, by the way, which is awesome. So in the scope of time, where did you start to explore a vision with Yulia?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to start dating her for a while and get to know her there's one more thing I want to say about seduction before we close that conversation. Yeah. And that is, I think most people want to be seduced. It's a very pleasant thing. The part that we don't like is if we get seduced and then we kind of wake up out of it jarringly because what we got seduced into doesn't match up with reality.
Sure.
That's the part where we feel deceived. That's the part where we have buyer's remorse. And so I'm also connecting with what Yulia was saying, that I followed through on the things that I mentioned. So yeah, think about this, and I'd love to hear in the comments below this video what people think about this and answer this question. Would you like to be seduced if everything you were seduced into came true? You know, whatever promises are being made in the seduction, or whatever expectations are being created in the seduction, would you like to be seduced if all of those were fulfilled? I don't know anyone who could say no to that, but feel free in the comments to tell us, you know, cause I mean, that's what it is. The fun part about seduction or being seduced is it's kind of like flow. You kind of forget yourself. You're just going with it. It feels good. You lose yourself in that moment. And that's why we enjoy being in love so much. Now, again, if you get cold water thrown on you because you realize this person is nothing what they've portrayed themselves to be, then yeah, that is not going to be fun. And that's going to be deceptive and manipulative and all the negative things that people think about seduction.
So so would you say that's the definition that has created a negative connotation around seduction, is what you just described, as far as like...
That and some very antiquated views of or perspectives of women, that women don't want pretty much all the same things that men do. I think most women do. They want them in different ways. You know, we are different, but you know, women want sex and all those things. Like we're all biological creatures, you know? And I think in the beginning, when seductions first started coming to the surface, people thought of it as, well, you're along the lines of like, you're stealing something away from a woman by using seduction. And I, if you talk to women and women who are very self-aware and honest, they that's kind of absurd the way that, you know, but some of them do think that way because they're kind of caught in that old way of thinking. Most of them, when they get honest, they're just like, no, I mean, you're not stealing anything away from someone.
Right. You mentioned that description asked that question around the comments. Can you say that one more time? Cause it changed even my,
yeah. So would you like to be seduced if all the expectations set up by the seduction got fulfilled or gets fulfilled?
Yeah. And I have another question around that for the comments is, you know, does even when Damon explains it that way, has that changed your perception around the idea of seduction? Just, and if so, how so? From that, do you want to talk about this next exercise? They mentioned, sure. I'm sure everyone's would love to hear about it. So it sounds like the two of you were dating for a little while, and then
I really liked her, and I realized that I would like to open the possibility of this being a long-term thing. There was a lot going against it though. Okay, so also to put this out there, especially for those who are just listening to the podcast, people who are watching this on video, they can tell I'm noticeably older than her. I'm 20 years older than her. So whenever I started thinking about, wow, I really like this person, I would like to see where this can go. Also, that I had a lot of experience where these things didn't work out. And so I was kind of afraid to, do I want to put my own self into this? Do I want to invest my emotions in it? And she was also from Romania. She wasn't living here in California full time. She was just here for the summer. And so it was like, okay, this is just going to be a summer romance, or could there be more to this? And the more I dated her, the more, yeah, I wanted more, but I also wanted to be realistic about it too. And so I thought the next step, and I think this is a wonderful thing to do with anyone who you're planning to do anything with long term, and that is to know each other's values. Mm-hmm. Now, instead of explaining exactly what values elicitation is and kind of proposing it as this exercise, I didn't want her to think about it. She was still in school at the time too. I didn't want her to think about it as an academic exercise. I wanted to know what was truly in her heart. And so we sat down one time, we were just talking, and I brought up a conversation about relationships. I just wanted to know what was her thoughts about relationships. And so I said, so, you know, what's really important to you in a relationship? And then this is where that values conversation really started to happen. And you, in order to do this well conversationally, you kind of need to practice it. And I've had lots of practice doing it. Mm-hmm. I use it in sales all the time. I think the most important thing with a sales prospect is to know what is important to them. I mean, that's the greatest respect for your client that you could have, is to really understand what's important to them. And then I do it in coaching. When I coach people, I feel like it's my responsibility to know what that person wants even better than they know what they want. I think that's a sign of a really good coach. And so that's what I wanted to understand from her, was what was she really looking for in a relationship? And is it compatible with what I really want in a relationship? Because if it's not, then I go, okay, we're just having a good time, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And then we're going to move on because we're just not really compatible.
The thing, though, here is that, and I've heard you mention that, there isn't such a thing as incompatible values. Values are all compatible. They are all positive. Now, the thing is the strategy on how you are going to fulfill that value. So, for example, we both value traveling. But let's say if one of us would fulfill that simply by watching movies or documentaries, and the other one actually wants to go and do it, that's not compatible, even though the value is the same.
It's a really good point, because I see that all the time when we travel a lot because we both love it. And then people will say, oh, I wish I could travel as much as you. And when I hear that, it's like hearing somebody scratch a chalkboard or something. It's like, if you want to do it, you can. And we start to have this conversation of, well, what stops you? And what ends up happening is you realize about 5 minutes into the conversation, they don't really want to travel. They like the idea of travel. They like the idea of reading about it or seeing someone else do it. But they don't want to buy the plane tickets. They don't want to make all the arrangements. They don't want to get out of their comfort zone and out of their routine and go to a different country, or, you know, they really don't want to do those things. So what she's saying is like, yeah, you can both value love. You can both value happiness. But if your idea of love and happiness is fulfilled through, you know, just staying at home and having romantic dinners at home, and then your partner, they want to get out and do things, that's an incompatible strategy. It's an incompatible, what's the other word we use? Values and, I can't forget this.
Well, anyway, speaking of values, it's very nice to find your values. And I feel like just that conversation that we had was bringing us closer. And I thought that it was very nice because it made me feel heard. It made me feel like you care about my values. You care about what I think, what I want. And it was a very nice exercise.
Yeah, it's when you're asking people these questions, get ready to feel more connected to that person, and they will feel more connected to you. It builds tremendous rapport just to find out, like, what is really important to that person. No, very few people really get asked that question. And so when you start asking those types of questions, the person's going to really open up to you, unless they're deceptive or they're hiding something, or they'd have to be terribly insecure, or they're trying to hide their motives. And that's also a good sign to know that if you're starting to ask these questions and they clam up, it's probably not someone you want to have a long-term relationship with. There's something not right there. And it's either because they're very insecure or they're trying to hide something.
I would add that doing this is not a very difficult thing. If you want to do it for yourself, we have a PDF in the description where you can follow the process step by step. Or if you just want to work it out with your partner, it can be as simple as asking a question: what's important to you? What do you want? And just listen to them. Just have a conversation where you listen to each other and you find out what do you really want and what's important to you.
Yeah, so I would highly recommend before doing this with someone else, following what is in the instructions in the PDF and that we give away. Elicit your own values first. Understand what's important to you first before doing this with someone else. First of all, it's just good exercise to get ready to use it with someone else. But the other thing too is, you know, if you don't know what you want going into something and you only get knowledge of what the other person wants, you're only having sort of half the conversation there. You need to know what you want so that when the person's telling you what they want, that you can make a good assessment. Is this compatible with you?
That's a good point. Clarity is very important.
Right. So basically what I did was I just asked her what was important to her in a relationship, and she gives me some answers, and I'm listening to the words she leans on, because a lot of the values, when you do it covertly, the values are sort of embedded in the sentences. They don't typically give you, it's not typically going to be like a question and answer scenario. Like if you know what the person's doing, if you know that you're doing an exercise, then it's kind of a fill in the blank sort of thing. But if you're having a conversation, you're going to have to sort of mine for the values embedded in the sentences. And a big way that you can know that is by listening to their tonality, how it shifts when they say certain words. And so if something is really meaningful to them, like it's very cute the way that she says the word love. She puts this extra emphasis and then her accent goes on top of it. And you can tell every time she says it, that that is a very important word for her. Love is very important to her. Now, not to say that's not important to other people. It's just that you can tell she puts extra emphasis on it. And so I'm eliciting her values and I'm taking note of them in my mind as she's, you know, saying them. And then every time I get one of her values, I say, well, what's important to you about that? So if she said love, I would say, or she says love.
Love.
And I say, well, you know, oh yeah, love is important to me too. So kind of sharing that, like, yeah, there's a connection here. And also you want to make sure that you're not, she doesn't feel like you're giving her the third degree, like this is an interrogation. So you want to make it more conversational and say, yeah, love is important to me too. And I'm just curious, what's important to you about love? The word I couldn't think of was criteria. So criteria, so you have values, and a value is a generalization about an experience that's important to you, according to my mentor, Steve Andreas. The criteria is how you meet that value. So if I say, okay, what's important to you, and you say love is important to me in a relationship, and then I would say as a criteria question, how do you know when you're experiencing love in a relationship? Now, for the guys out there, you ask women these questions like this, and they're going to be like, who is this guy? Who is this guy who's, you know, asking these great questions that just, you know, is opening me up? Like, they're going to love this, because people, first of all, love to talk about what's important to them. And then when you go deeper and more and get into more specifics, even better. So then they start to tell you how they experience love, which is just giving you their strategy, which is great, even further, you know, for the seduction. And also for checking in, well, is that compatible with me? You know, does she like a lot of cuddling and touching, or is it more about compliments? You know, her criteria for love is that you're telling her on a regular basis that she's loved, which doesn't work for me because I'm not very.
I would like to interrupt you there. No. So, you know, you mentioned about the criteria, and if we have the same criteria, and we also mentioned a little earlier, if people have the same strategies to fulfill certain values. Now, the people who are listening, if they are going to do this exercise in their relationship and they do find out that they have opposite strategies or different criteria, would you say that's the end of the relationship? Would you say that's just the beginning of where some work needs to be done? What should they, because I don't want people to feel like, oh, I don't want to do this exercise because I don't really want to know if we are actually incompatible because I don't want to leave this person.
Yeah. So when I talk about this, and I've talked about this, I've taught this with coaches, and they'll say, so should I not work with clients who have different values than me? And I go, absolutely not. Like, why? We can have different values and still come together. But when we're talking about really high level values, we're kind of all going to agree with those, like peace, love, joy, happiness. I don't know anyone who doesn't want those things. So you want to check the criteria to make sure that that is compatible, and compatible doesn't mean the same. Okay, so how you like experiencing love doesn't necessarily have to be the same way that I do, but the question becomes, am I flexible and adaptable to that, or is that a hard no? Like, no, I can't do that. So like another way of thinking about it is, I don't know anyone who doesn't value honesty, right? But when we go to criteria, how do you know when you're being honest or someone else is being honest? This gets really interesting because people all have very different ways of thinking about honesty. So if you ask a person, hey, if a friend comes to you and asks you if you like their new haircut, what would you tell them? What would be the honest thing to tell them according to you? Is it to tell them the truth, you don't like it? Or is it to tell them what they want to hear because they already have it on their head and there's not much they can do about it? And you know, because you want to be a good friend. Some people are going to say, I'm going to not tell them the truth because they feel like they're being honest to the relationship. They're being honest to the friendship. But people like me who are very literal, I'm going to say, no, if I ask you that question, I want you to answer it honestly. I want you to tell me the truth. Okay. But not everybody wants to hear the truth. Okay. So then that might be a problem. How you perceive honesty might be a problem in a relationship.
What if for me, it was just depending upon what they're about. Like, let's say they're about to go on stage in front of 100 people. I might just support, you know, whatever sports circle. Right. And then
I'm going to write this down next time we're at a conference. <I'm about laughs> to
oh.
Yeah. So when it comes to criteria, even your criteria doesn't need to be the same. It just needs to be, can I work with this? Is there common ground here? Or is there like then we get into like cheating. I've heard actually people say, and men and women say, well, I didn't really cheat on my spouse. And I said, well, you know, when somebody says something like that, you go, okay, what's going on? And yeah. So I ask, and it was like, once they tell me what they did, I'm like, no, that's cheating. That really is cheating. That's full on cheating. I don't see any other way about that. But if that's how that person sees it, that's a good indication to me that like, and I've actually done this on dates and they told me, and I was like, okay, this is where the line ends with this one. If she thinks that this is okay in a relationship, at a marriage that this person had been in, I'm not doing this. I'm not getting into a relationship with her. So this is also very helpful to know who you don't want to be in a relationship with.
Sure, like a historical criteria.
Right.
Is what you're talking about. You asked questions about that. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. And then once I had Yulia's values, which were very compatible with mine, almost surprisingly so, because she's so much younger, but that's one of the beauties of values. It's not really dependent on age. And even the criteria that she gave me, I was like, wow, this fits really well. And so I said, okay, Yulia, you know, what would it be like if, that's a great way to start anything. What would it be like if, I'm not saying it is going to be, I'm just saying, what would it be like if? And then I just used all of her values to paint a vision of what being together over a long period of time would be like. And what that vision was us traveling a lot, working together because we work together in the same business, and just exploring the world and working off of a laptop and going to visit all these exotic places and being able to live in California and Romania part-time. And her head almost exploded. Her eyes just lit up and she was like, wow, yeah, that would be amazing. And I'd say, just imagine us doing that together. Guess what we've been doing for the past 5 years? That's exactly what we've been doing for the past 5 years.
And that's to emphasize again, fulfilling on the promise, fulfilling on the vision. And otherwise, so I'm pretty sure if he would have made so many promises from the beginning and I would have noticed that those don't come true, I would have not believed that this would even happen. So fulfilling your promises is very, very important.
Yeah. So once you paint or illustrate, you know, this vision together with the person you're eliciting the values with, basically if life with you is nothing like that vision, I don't think that person's going to stick around, and nor should they, because you sort of lured them in with this beautiful vision based on everything that's important to them and then said, but yeah, I'm not going to fulfill on it. And so that's, you know, they can only live off that vision for so long.
So with such a strategy, you know, for creating a lot, you know, creating alignment between a couple, it just comes with a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's which makes total sense. Do you think that so can we talk a little bit about how you two what happened as far as the you know how you two were on two ends of the world for a while, and was there do you believe that vision helped during that time? Can we talk a little bit about that? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got separated, as what Nate is mentioning. We were traveling. We went from Rome, which when COVID was starting, like that was the hotspot. We were there when it was primarily COVID was breaking out in Italy. And we met there because we were kind of going back and forth. She would come here for several months, and then I'd go to Romania, but not for several months at that time.
Yeah. So the thing is that COVID started right after that trip, and we were supposed to be together. I was supposed to come back to California, and we couldn't. So since then, because of the immigration processes and because of the lockdowns and all of those things, we were basically apart for 2.5 more years. In total,
well, we saw each other. We were seeing each other every
3 months or so, but for a short amount of time. So all in all, I would say out of the 5 years, 4 of them were long distance relationship. And how we got through that, I can definitely say that the vision helped a lot. Staying connected to what we want together, staying connected to where we are heading, that was that played a major role in actually wanting to continue the relationship. Because especially when you're at distance, before we were even married, it would have been so easy to just say, let's just let it go. Let's just not fight for this. Because, you know, I just move on with my life over there. He does the same here. It wouldn't have had much complication in things that we need to separate from each other's lifestyle. But again, the vision was very strong. We knew we both wanted it. We were ready to wait for it or be patient for it. And it was not easy. It was not easy. Even with the vision and all of the things we tried to stay connected and see each other as often as possible, it was not easy, but definitely possible.
Well, it created, I think, an even more resilient vision because one sense it was being challenged because we couldn't be together full time and she couldn't enter this country. So we would go long gaps of not being able to see each other and only doing video calls. Then we would travel because that was the only way we could be together. So that aligned with the vision. And so it sort of firmed up the vision and gave evidence of the vision being a real thing that we were aligning to. And then when we had to go apart, which was, man, we did this for years where we would spend 2 weeks or a month together in a different country. And then we had to part ways. Oh, that was the hardest, the hotel rooms and the airports and all that. But in some sense, I think that really strengthened things. And then when we got married in Istanbul, because again, she couldn't come here. And at the time I couldn't get into Romania because only family members could actually, or people, Romanians or family members of Romanians could get in there. So we go to a different country that allows us both in to get married. They tell us no. And then I'm not going to get into the whole story because it's been vlogged. It's out there. But we end up being able to get married and they love the story because a Californian and a Romanian is going to their country during, you know, pandemic and lockdowns to get married. They loved it. So the national media picked it up. And so that was a big deal. And that really strengthened our vision because we were like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And in some ways, I feel like that was part of the vision. It's like your vision is purposefully vague so that you can allow extraordinary things to happen.
Yeah.
And we'd go travel and find, you know, run into these extraordinary things. And then after we got married, this was interesting. We wanted to go to Colombia as one place to meet. Her mother talks her out of it. My friend Dennis Michael, just out of nowhere, says, "Hey, if you've ever thought about going to Egypt, this is the time to go because there's no tourists there, and you pretty much have everything to yourself." And he had been, that was his third time going to Egypt. And I said, "Let's go to Egypt, and don't tell your mother where we're going, so she can't talk you out of it." And we go to Egypt, and again, like, it exceeded the vision that we had. It was just absolutely amazing. It was such a extraordinary trip.
Another benefit that I feel like we got out of the entire struggle we've been through was just being grateful to be together. Even though we thought that, you know, once we are finally together, it's been several months already, we'll just, you know, get into our routine and we'll just be like a regular couple. But the truth is, we are so grateful to be together. And every once in a while, we remember. And it's very beautiful. It's very beautiful. You appreciate your partner so much more after having to go through a challenge. And I don't think it's necessary. It has to be a distance thing. I think any kind of hardship that a relationship faces can be a great lesson for gratitude later on.
So you don't feel like you were totally suckered in and deceived by my NLP abilities and you don't regret any of this?
No, because it's working very well. I hope it holds on for the lifetime.
Well, I don't like to hope. Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. Yeah. No, it's been amazing. And I don't feel like you've done anything unethical or that you were not supposed to.
I hope people listening or watching this can finally close that gap, that any attempt to persuade, to influence people to do what you want. I mean, as long as the person has the mind to say yes or no, depending on what it is that they want, and they're an adult, then, you know, that's, allow people to make that choice for themselves. Like, don't assume that it's not okay because you're influencing someone or persuading someone. We are always influencing and persuading. We've been doing it since we were pretty much born. So it's a natural thing to do. As long as you're doing it conscientiously, you're not being deceptive about it, then there's no reason why you shouldn't. This is how things happen.
Yeah, and what you mentioned as far as aligning visions, I mean, every married couple should do that, you know. And if someone's listening to this and they're not married, they should still elicit their own values and understand. And start to create their own vision for their own lives.
I would recommend men and women learn how to do this with dating. Everything from the boundaries work, where, like, I think for women who want to meet the right guy, if you believe that all you can't go and find that guy and approach that guy, and you have to wait for that guy to come to you, and then what does that mean? Well, that means that you're going to limit your prospects, so to speak, and you're just going to have to settle with whichever one is the best one. Why don't you be a little more proactive and go out there and find the guy you want and go meet him? And then, as I'm saying this about for women, I really mean it for guys as well. Like, don't just settle for the best that comes your way. Go and find the person you want. And also, when you elicit your own values, around a relationship, you're going to know much better what it is you're looking for. That's the hard part too. One of the reasons why I kind of was in a tailspin for years while I was dating is I could admit this. I knew this. I didn't know what I was looking for. I really didn't. When I met Yulia, I was like, okay, she seems a little too good to be true, because she's all that I've been looking for and didn't even know it. So when I realized that, I was like, okay, I'm not letting her out of my sight now. I told the first dinner I had with her parents in Romania, I told them that I was going to marry her. And then the whole table just went quiet. we had not even known each other a year.
You didn't even tell me ahead of time that that's what you had in mind. It was a surprise for me as well.
Well, they were throwing up obstacles. Like, you know, we want her to stay in Europe. We don't want her to go live in California. But I was like, oh, well, don't worry, I'll marry her. And it was just like, anyway, that's what a little bit of palinka will do for you. go to Romania, they'll show you. So yeah, I think knowing what you want, being able to elicit from someone else what they want, and understanding the criteria of that, like, how do they go about doing that, what is the strategy for them to go and do that, that's going to tell you whether or not you're compatible. And then from there, build that vision together. And you can do this overtly, meaning you can sit down with the person and say, okay, this weird guy on YouTube, you know, said there's this exercise, let's do this exercise together. If you're not comfortable doing it conversationally and covertly, the reason why I like doing it covertly is because I feel like I get more honest answers. The person's not thinking, oh, I need to say this or say that because that's what sounds right. Or maybe is the person, you know, testing me to see if I'm compatible with them in a relationship. If you tell them that all up front, they might kind of play to those answers. I didn't want that. I wanted her, the honest truth coming from her, what's in her heart, and does that really work for me as well? And then from there, illustrate that vision together. And when you're basing a vision off of your highest values, there's nothing more powerful than that. I think people create visions on, you know, with vision boards, and they just kind of manufacture a vision in their mind. And sure, it looks great, but then it doesn't really have anything to it. There's no real connection to it. But when you base a vision off of your values, that becomes extremely powerful. All right, so should we wrap this up? All right. So among many things, NLP is a communication model. It is a model for learning. It's a model for understanding how you, what's going on in your unconscious so that you can make changes to it, because your model is how you perceive reality. And so you live according to that model. Communication is a huge model. NLP is a communication model. So you can learn to communicate much better when you know NLP. So with enough good communication, patience, and compassion, there's actually no problem that can't be solved. I truly believe that. Any problem can be solved if you're given enough space, you're patient, you're compassionate, and the communication is good. And the thing about the communication is you can keep improving it. If it's not good enough yet, it doesn't mean it never will be. You just keep improving it. So I recommend using NLP in every area of your life. I have, and it's worked out incredibly well for me. And why would you not want to use that for dating and relationships? Because chances are a long-term relationship, or just your friends, relationships with your friends, those things make up a huge part of your life. Why would you leave that up to chance? So make the most out of your connections with others. Make the most out of your connections or your connection with your life partner, and use NLP every step of the way to improve that, make it better, make it stronger.
I totally agree. I think our relationship is so much stronger for the fact that we use NLP. And right now, obviously, it's more consciously. We do various elicitation every once in a while, but I can totally see how it helped us get closer together and really build something very strong and durable.
That's just because you don't know all the covert stuff I've been doing.
That's what I don't.
Thank you, Duke, for sharing insights from your experiences.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. So really look forward to hearing or reading the comments about this, because I know it's a bit of a controversial topic. And I just hope that we brought a lot more clarity and shined a lot more light on the truth about all of this, rather than just kind of thinking that this, seduction is a bad thing, or, we shouldn't talk about these things, they're taboo. And it was very much like this in a lot of the early NLP trainings I attended. You just couldn't talk about this, and it was just off limits. And that never made any sense to me. I kept my mouth shut for a long time, but now I think more than ever, especially for men, this conversation is important, and we need to become better communicators. And NLP is a huge step in that direction.